A special Dad's Army sketch not seen or heard of since 1968 has been found. A new audio recording of A Stripe for Fraser has been found. Room at the Bottom from Season 3, only released on DVD and shown on TV in black and white, has been recolorised. And a mini Dad's Army night is going to be shown on BBC Two on 13th of December 2008. What is going on? Find out in episode 30 of the Dad's Army podcast.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run?
And welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army podcast, episode 30 to be precise. And yes, it's been a very long time since you last heard me talk when I haven't been giving a commentary on a podcast, and that, as some of you may know, is because I've recently become a father and all my priorities have been completely turned on their heads, upside down, inside out. Ugh. I haven't even got time to get dressed sometimes. It's incredible. So what I'm hoping to do is still have a reasonably regular podcast. It may not be as regular as it once was, i.e. every 2 weeks. So we'll have to wait and see exactly how it pans out over the next few weeks and months and so on. Some great stuff coming up over the next half an hour or so. We got an awful lot of Dad's Army news to get through, some of which you may have heard in the national media, other news you may not have. And then we have a featured episode discussion that's not a commentary of Season 3's Menace from the Deep. So I hope you enjoyed this latest podcast. Feel free, as always, to get in touch with us. Email address is james@dadsarmypodcast.com. And I look forward to hearing from you and hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast with your host, James.
Well, first up in the news this week is the rather wonderful news that a couple of pieces of previously lost, and when I say lost, I mean completely lost, nothing existed. There was no visual media and there was absolutely no soundtracks at all of two pieces of classic Dad's Army, the first of which is the 1968 Christmas Night with the Stars sketch. Now, for those of you who don't know, Dad's Army frequently, four times to be precise, appeared on a regular variety, a festive variety programme shown in the late 60s and early 70s that featured, well, the only way in which I can really compare it, I think, is a little bit like the modern-day Children in Need appeals. You get lots of different stars and actors doing sometimes specially recorded sketches of their own programmes to feature in this special compilation variety performance. And Dad's Army did that, as I said, on four occasions. And two of those sketches were lost visually. This happened in 1968 with the sketch that's been rediscovered and didn't actually have a name. It's commonly referred to throughout Dad's Army fandom as the Father Christmas sketch, as it featured the majority of the platoon in Santa Claus outfits. The other one that's lost is the Cornish Floral Dance, although an audio track of that does exist and featured on the BBC DVD release of the Christmas specials about this time last year. But this particular sketch was thought to be completely lost, and it's a wonderful discovery, and I have to say it's fantastic that, well, it's a fantastic end to the 40th anniversary year. In addition to that, again, this is some more great news. One of the missing episodes, A Stripe for Fraser, which I have to say, in case you're not familiar with this news and you're getting excited, it's still missing visually. You can't watch it, I'm afraid. But an audio recording has been found of that as well. Now, what we'll do is go into the detail of how these two audios have been recovered in a later podcast when I've had a chance to do a little bit more research into it. But for those of you who are members of the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, you can read the stories and a little bit more information about the discoveries in the most recent Society magazine. And there's a couple, well, both discoveries are covered in some detail by Rafe Montague, and he's the guy who, the podcast, we interviewed him back, I think, on podcast 15, but he's the guy who puts together the Dad's Army DVDs for release in the UK. As I said, it's a really great piece of news, most surprising piece of news, really, really chuffed to get some new Dad's Army material after all of these years, and the timing, as I said, couldn't be better. In addition to that, we got some extra news, as if we hadn't had enough rediscoveries. Room at the Bottom, which is a season 3 episode, has always been available in black and white, and I think it's been repeated on BBC Two, maybe on one or possibly two occasions, again in its black and white format. It was even released on the season 3 DVD in black and white. Now, due to some ultra clever technology, again, which the actual process is gone into in some detail in the Dad's Army Permission to Speak Sir magazine, but due to that process being successful, they've been able to recolorise this episode, and BBC Two are premiering it on the 13th of December. Now, depending on when I manage to complete the editing on this podcast, that date may have been and gone already, or it's possible that it's going to come up if I happen to be ultra efficient and get it all edited nice and quickly. But again, it's another fantastic innovation, and it's really unexpected. Came completely out of the blue to me anyway. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether or not this colour version could be viewed in exactly the same way the other episodes of Season 3 can be viewed, i.e. in as good quality as the remainder of the episodes in Series 3. I sincerely hope so, and to be fair, I fully expect it to be just the same as any other Dad's Army colour episodes. So, again, some fantastic fantastic news, really. And the BBC Two have decided to feature it as part of a mini Dad's Army night on BBC Two at 8:25 on the 13th of December. And that features as part of a mini Dad's Army night. It starts at 7:10 with a programme called Life in the Box, which is a programme that features the life and times of Arthur Lowe. At 19:55, there's another documentary called Missing Presumed Wiped, and that's featured as a special on some of the DVDs, or one of the DVDs. I can't remember which one it is now, but it's been on TV a few times and focuses on the missing episodes of Dad's Army. At 8:25, we have the episode Room at the Bottom in colour, and that's with a new introduction recorded by Ian Lavender. And that new introduction is actually covered in the current edition of the Radio Times as well. There's a double spread featuring the discovery of this programme, and also talks about how Ian Lavender recorded his little introduction. And at 9:00, there's a repeat of the Comedy Connections episode that featured Dad's Army, which, in my view, is by far the best documentary that's been on television about Dad's Army this year, considerably better than a Jonathan Ross programme. So all in all, that's a pretty good latter half of 2008. And for those of you in the UK, or those of you who have the means to watch BBC Two on Saturday, I hope you have a wonderful time just reliving some of these programmes. 3 of the 4 programmes are repeats. They've been on TV before. Obviously, Room at the Bottom is brand new. So once you've seen those programmes, feel free to email me in, tell me what you thought about them, and we may well feature your comments on a future podcast. My email address, as I'm sure regular listeners will know, is james@dadsarmypodcast.com. Continuing with the 40th anniversary theme, the British Film Institute are having a celebratory evening on the 22nd of December, so it's just in time for Christmas. Now, this is going to be shown at the National Film Theatre, and that's down on the south bank of the Thames. And the last time I checked, I'm afraid that tickets for this particular event had been completely sold out, which is not really surprising, given that the event was originally going to be shown in the Third Cinema, which is a relatively small screen, and I think tickets sold out practically more or less within three to four weeks of the event being announced on the BFI's website. It's now been moved to NFT1, and I'm not certain whether or not there are any tickets, or whether there any new tickets become available because of the switch in screen. I would suggest that you check the BFI's website, which is www.bfi.org.uk/whatson, just to check to see whether there are any single tickets available left at the event. It's been entitled Oddities and Rarities, and it's supposed to be a collection of rarely seen pieces of footage, including home movies, interviews, and if we're really fortunate, you never know, they may decide to show the colour version of Room at the Bottom again. We'll have to wait and see. Ralph Montague, once again, has been instrumental in putting together the elements or the various pieces of media to be shown on that event, and so I look forward to that particular evening. I am going myself. The podcast will cover the events, and I hope to bring you a couple of interviews or brief short recordings with key individuals who have been involved in putting together this evening. And it's another really good event that, again, prior to this year, I would have been highly surprised that Dad's Army featured so prominently at a major institution such as the BFI, and I'm just really, really chuffed that the 40th anniversary has made everybody remember how good and how high a regard Dad's Army is held in by the general public. So, fantastic news. Really looking forward to that particular evening, and I'll make certain I'll bring you a report in the next podcast.
Have you logged on to the Perry and Croft Forum yet? Well, if you are a fan of Jimmy Perry and David Croft's programmes and you haven't taken a look, then you are missing out. But don't panic. You can still join the thriving online community who discuss every conceivable aspect of Dad's Army, Urang Milord, Heidi High, and many others at Perry and Croft.co.uk and click on the link to the forum.
Continuing in the vein of new Dad's Army events, and this is a kind of new thing, but it's a continuation really. The Dad's Army stage play that was so successful in 2007 and 2008 is returning for a new tour in 2009. And the original episodes that played in the first and second run of the play were were the missing episodes, A Strike for Fraser, and The Loneliness of the Long Distance Walker, along with a classic, The Deadly Attachment, and Room at the Bottom also appeared in certain venues. Now, it's not been announced which episodes are going to be performed in the new version of the stage play, although it is rumoured that Jimmy Perry and David Croft's favourite episodes are going to be adapted. So that would be Mum's Army and Branded. And my feelings, if that rumour proves to be true, I've got mixed feelings. I think Branded is going to be particularly difficult to pull off effectively, as it's such a classic piece of television. However, they said that about The Deadly Attachment, and I feel that was probably the best adaptation of the original tour. So it remains to be seen as to whether I'll be proved correct there or not. The casting has yet to be announced as well, although there's a couple of things that I think we can tell from Calibre's website. First of all, the new picture, or the new poster, should I say, being used to advertise this tour. It's entitled Dad's Marches On. It's entitled Dad's Army Marches On, and features a picture of Richard Tate and Leslie Grantham. Now, I understand from Calibre that Leslie is definitely interested in continuing his role as Private Walker, and we would assume from Richard Tate's image being used in the promotion material that he will continue as Jones. But that, both of those are assumptions. It's not been confirmed yet. I will be pressing Calibre, or I'll be talking to Ed, who's a good friend of the podcast, as gave us an interview when the first stage play was announced back in 2007, and was very generous with the information that he gave us. So any news on either the content of that production in terms of the episodes or the actors who are going to be featuring in the production, I will bring you as soon as I have that information. Now, when you follow a programme like Dad's Army that aired 30, 40 years ago and featured some ageing actors anyway, it's inevitable that there are occasions when we're going to have to, here at the podcast, bring you some news of those actors and production crew passing. And unfortunately, we have two such obituaries to bring you and discuss, the first of which is John Ringham. Now, John Ringham featured in four episodes of Dad's Army. He's particularly of interest because in the very first episode of Dad's Army, The Man in the Hour, he played Private Bracewell, and he was originally envisaged to become a regular member of the platoon. And for one reason or another, I think it was just a case of too many regular platoon members, his character was cut. And I think as a concession made by Jimmy and David, I think they always said, well, we're going to cut your character, but we will let you return in a couple of other episodes. And they were good to their word. And John Ringham appeared as Captain Bailey in three other episodes. That's A Stripe for Fraser, Under Fire, and Room at the Bottom. That particular episode seems to be getting into all of our news articles this time around. John's acting career was quite prolific and continued after Dad's Army. Particularly, one that springs to mind for me is The Piglet Files, which I seem to remember watching back in the 80s or early 90s, perhaps. He was also fairly prolific on the stage. His career started in the stage and then he moved on to television and starred in more than 100 different programmes. So our thoughts here at the podcast are with John's friends and family at this time. And more recently, Bob Spires, who, again, followers of Dad's Army will be familiar with the name. Again, casual viewers may not be, perhaps, but Bob directed four episodes of Dad's Army in 1977 in the final run, or the final series, and he directed Number Engaged, The Miser's Hoard, Making a Private Pike, and Wake Up Warmington. And Bob has passed recently, and his obituary made the national newspapers. Well, as did John Ringham's, to be fair. But I think Bob got more coverage, probably because of some other programmes that he'd had a hand in directing, predominantly Fawlty Towers. There were six episodes there that he directed in 1979. He also directed some Come Back, Mrs. Noah. Now, Come Back, Mrs. Noah is a very maligned and not very frequently spoken about Perry and Croft. I think it's Perry and Croft. It's at least David Croft. Production, and I'm not entirely certain how many episodes he directed there, but he was involved, and he also had some input into Are You Being Served in 1980. So again, our thoughts go to those who knew Bob, his friends and his family, and we will remember both John's and Bob's contribution to Dad's Army particularly well. Now, it's usual at some point in every podcast for me to discuss the feedback that we've received, and I'm going to do that. Although we haven't received a great amount of feedback this time around, we received a tremendous amount after the first commentary podcast we recorded, and that was number 28, I believe. And I read most of that out in podcast number 29. So I would encourage you as a listener, if you have any opinion either on Dad's Army, any format of Dad's Army, or even the podcast itself, and you've got some suggestions for me, or you'd like to perhaps feature on the podcast at some point to discuss a certain element about Dad's Army that you really enjoy, then please get in touch with me. My email address is james@dadsarmypodcast.com. You can do that just as simply as sending an email, or you can log on to www.dadsarmy.podomatic.com and leave a message under each particular podcast just by clicking on the word comments. Now, we've got one particular guy who has left loads of feedback in the way I've just described on the website, who I've not referred to very much at all in the podcast, and I deliberately wanted to just single you out, Alan, it is you, to say thank you very much indeed for the support that you've shown the podcast through your comments, and also some of your suggestions and questions, I'm sure, have been helpful to other listeners as well. So I would encourage all of your listeners to send in feedback. Any kind of feedback is welcome, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. I'm really not too bothered, so long as we can actually get some feedback and we can take some of the suggestions and discuss episodes that listeners would like us to. Now, Alan asked us for a discussion about Menace from the Deep, which is also a season 3 episode, a nice early episode, and I'm glad to say that Angela, my wife, joined me once again to watch this episode, and bearing in mind that she's not particularly keen on Dad's Army, so she does do me a real big favour sometimes in discussing these episodes, or even watching them, let alone discussing them. She is, however, particularly observant and extremely articulate, so I do hope you enjoy our comments on Menace of the Deep.
I've got another idea. Listen, why don't we open and shut the window, this one, and then they'll see the light from the shore.
Ah, yes, excellent. You've not heard the last of this, Wilson.
Permit to speak, sir.
Yes.
I'd like to be volunteer to open and shut the window so they can see the light from the shore.
Now, I think Sergeant Wilson had better do this. Come over here, Sergeant.
I come, sir.
Now, we're going to do this in Morse code.
Well, I don't know anything about Morse code for a start.
Naturally. Now, you were in the Navy, Fraser. You understand the Morse code. How do you spell help?
Mr. Man. H-E-L-P.
He doesn't know anything about it. He was only a cook.
What did he know, a cook?
And that was a clip from the season 3 episode Menace from the Deep. And here to discuss it with me once more is Angela. Welcome back to the podcast, Angela.
Hello.
Now, we've just turned the television off after watching Menace from the Deep. Now, are you really pleased to be back on the podcast to discuss it? Or is this really being dragged against your will?
No, I did offer.
You offered?
I offered to come back and have a look at another episode.
Okay, and it wasn't too painful, or was it?
No, Dad's Army's never painful. I just would say it's not, you know, side-splittingly funny.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, first of all, we'll start off with the opening scene, which is with the two of the only four guest stars, if you like, to this episode, with the two sailors at the end of the pier discussing what's going to happen when they're relieved by the Home Guard shortly. And one of those actors was Larry Martin, who went on to play Private Walker in the radio version of the Dad's Army series. That was, I think he's credited as Sailor Number 2.
Right.
So he's the second sailor to speak. But he actually filled in when James Beck died. He took over that particular role when the BBC decided to record a radio version of Dad's Army.
It's quite interesting when they have their little speech at the beginning of the episode and they realise that Home Guard are going to be taking over for that week. And they seem to be quite comical. Was that true historically? Did they have quite a sort of bad reputation?
Don't know whether you call it a bad reputation. I think a lot of people saw them as a joke because they're a bunch of older statesmen or, you know, within Pike's case, a very young boy, too young to go into, well, he wasn't too young to go into the services, actually. He just awaiting his call-up. But no, people seem to think that they were taking themselves very seriously when really they were a bit of a joke. And I think the regular service personnel, particularly, you know, the full-time sailors and so on, yes, would have regarded them as a bit of a joke. So that's probably the reason as to why that was phrased or termed that way. The second scene, well, is the briefing in Mannerin's office. There's no Church Hall scene in this episode, and I really like that those kind of scenes. And the diagram on the chalkboard or the blackboard is quite a common feature. And I have to say, a lot of the pictures or the diagrams drawn on there, they're rather good.
Well, I was going to say, it's very detailed. Someone must have taken a lot of time to actually produce that.
Well, I don't know for definite, but I reckon the programme probably had an official drawer of these things, because there are a number of exercises that they discuss in advance, and they frequently have these diagrams, and I do think they're good. They even had a couple of birds. Did you notice that?
I didn't actually, no.
Well, such was the detail there.
But it does make it quite unrealistic, because you think the Home Guard would never do that. They'd never spend sort of, you know, half an hour drawing a detailed picture on a blackboard. It'd be all sort of, you know, quick lines and directions and arrows of what people are supposed to be doing.
Well, perhaps in the Home Guard, but it would fit in quite well with Mannerin's character to spend about half an hour. bearing in mind he was quite keen usually to keep away from home, then he would have probably quite enjoyed drawing that.
A bit of artwork.
A bit of artwork, as one way of putting it, yes. I thought also when they were discussing the food that they were going to be taking into the with them onto the exercise, the sausages, the mustard, fruitcake, fruits, and
they did quite well, really, considering there was all the rationing about.
That was my point. Given that this is supposed to be in ration in wartime, I suppose you've got Jones, who's a butcher by trade. I'm not quite certain how Godfrey gets hold of a variety of different kinds of mustard, but yeah. I think someone can cook some kind of fruitcake. A lot of the time, there were substitutes used. So maybe the sausages. I mean, the sausages, Jane's sausages in one episode, I think, was... I think he said there was something that was in them wasn't meat. It was bread or something. I can't remember. So perhaps it's not really...
perhaps it's not really as good as it sounds. Wilson, though, being fairly disinterested, who brings along his acid drops. Now, there's a line here. When Wilson says he's got his quarter of a pound of acid drops, Mannerin says, "I'd never have guessed." Now, that sounds quite strange, I think, and he still gets a laugh from the audience, but if you read the scripts, John Lemessurier gets his line slightly wrong. What he should have said was, "I've got some acid drops, they're my favourite," to which Mannerin responds, "I'd never have guessed," right, which kind of makes a little bit more sense, yes, of that line. Now, I always wondered whether Mannerin, or whether Arthur Lowe had messed up his line, or what has happened.
I'm surprised they didn't go back and refilm it.
Do you know, reading the scripts, if they'd have gone back and refilmed every time an actor said something that they shouldn't have done, then they would never have got it recorded. Particularly Clive Dunn in one of the latter scenes in this episode, is higgledy-piggledy. He gets his lines in the wrong order, and Arthur Lowe still manages to respond to him, and Jones makes up his own... Clive Dunn makes up his own lines half the time, so how they managed to do that, I'm really not sure. It's not like today's
bit
television.
Bit of improvisation there.
Bit of improv, certainly, yeah. The external scene, or the first external scene, I remember when we were watching it, you were saying, "Oh, this is all very predictable. I don't like this." Mm. And this is when they were trying to get on the boat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could see what was going to happen a mile off, couldn't you?
Yeah. Didn't find it particularly funny then.
No, because I think part of humour is the unexpected. And I think that's what some of the American comedies that we've been watching are very good at. They're observational, and they come back with some unexpected lines, and it's those lines that get you, because you didn't know, you know, what was going to happen or what was going to be said. But some of the scenes in the Dad's Army, you could definitely see what was going to happen. I think there was that with the boat, and also later on with the hammock. You just see the hammock and you think, okay, I know what's going to happen at some point.
I don't know, but you're not too keen on that kind of humour. You prefer, yeah, to be surprised.
I think. Well, that's always the big question. What makes something funny? And it's going to be something different for everybody. Mm. And also, it's quite difficult to analyse. But I think a surprise element is you know, an important element of humour. Mm.
I see. I mean, I think you're right. A lot of Dad's Army, you can see it coming a mile away. Occasionally, it takes you by surprise if you haven't seen an episode before or haven't seen it for some time.
Having said that, there is moving on to just another comedy programme, Only Fools and Horses. There's one particular scene in that is quite predictable, and I can watch it time and time again. I find it funny, and that's the one where Del Boy, someone lifts... Yeah, the bar.
The classic scene with, yeah, Trigger.
That's right. Yeah, they lift the bar up. It's when he's trying to be a yuppie, and he's in this wine bar. He leans, puts his arm down to lean on the bar, and it's gone through. And he falls through. And I can watch that time and time again. Well, that is funny.
Well, I think that is a very similar kind of humour to Dad's Army, you see. It's it's predictable. You can see it coming. You can watch it. It's got something called rewatch value. You can, yeah, see it again and again and still laugh. And a lot of the people I know who love Dad's Army, and certainly people within the Appreciation Society, can sit... I mean, they've seen all of these episodes hundreds of times, and yet you can watch it again and either pick up something that you hadn't noticed before or find the same joke funny in the same way that you were described.
I think maybe it's when people buy into the characters as well. They know them so well, they're familiar with them, and they've almost become like part of a family.
Yes, well, that's very much what Dad's Army is like, I think. Very, like an extended, eccentric, mad family. Although, having said that, I'm not too sure. I think the Dad's Army platoon actually make my family look a little bit more normal, which otherwise they wouldn't, but there you go. One thing I did want to mention was that Fraser was given the responsibility of rowing the boat between the two halves of the pier. And just as a tangent, I'm not entirely certain if there's any sense to blowing up a pier in the middle to make certain someone doesn't land on one end of it. Maybe there is some sense there, I'm not so certain. But he was deposed again because, you said predictably, Mannerin had difficulty getting in the boat.
And also had difficulty rowing, and I didn't quite get that. Why would someone find it difficult to row?
Have you ever tried to row before?
Yeah, it's really easy. And I'm not coordinated.
When have you rowed before? Tell me when you've rowed before.
Lots of times, but it's just I just think it's quite easy. Why would someone find that difficult?
Well, rowing is hard in the sea. You've got currents.
Well,
so
maybe
choppy.
The sea. Yeah.
Maybe not everybody has got your, you know, rowing skills. But so as I was saying before, Fraser, as a second time, well, it was actually the first of two times Fraser was removed from the coxswain or coxswain position because in another episode later on called Sons of the Sea, Mannering gets fed up with Fraser's rowing calling the shots and telling other people how to row and removes him. And both times John Laurie has exactly the same expression on his face. If you watch that scene in Sons of the Sea together with this particular scene in Menace from the Deep, then you can see it's almost identical, which I hadn't noticed before I'd seen it.
Is there anything that Mannering's actually really good at?
Give the illusion. Well, Mannering is actually good at certain things, and when it comes up in stories every now and again, then it takes you by surprise. But he has got quite a tactical mind. I think his attributes are more character rather than talents, if you know what I mean. He's got a very, very good heart, and sometimes you know, just being well-meaning can be a greater asset than being particularly good at something if you can't communicate with people, and especially towards the latter end of Dad's Army. You see Mannering's skills at bringing everyone together, and there's a couple of episodes that centres around his role as a leader rather than what he's good at, and all of the other characters do, you know, fall apart without him. And but there's an interesting point you raised there. I think, yeah, very good. Into the pier then, when they... on the inside at the end of the pier. There's only one scene here where Wilson gets animated, and that's when Mannering decides to lay claim to the hammock.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing that he seems to give a monkey's about for the entire
episode. Has a mini tantrum there.
He did, he stomped his
foot. He did!
Yes. we had a mini story from Fraser when he recited his mariners or lost mariners in the wind or something.
Show a leg.
Yeah, I thought that... That was Jones.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, that was Jones.
I'm getting the characters mixed up.
No, not to worry. You're just showing how wonderfully...
Little I know about Dad's Army.
Yes, well, it's entertaining, I would imagine. So, no, Jones was the, show a leg story, which are quite interesting, I think. I think all that really was just a little bit of a setup for when Hodges is asleep in the hammock and they can use it later on, and it's quite funny. But Jones also was doing the Morse code, so the dot, 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 da, da, da. And I'm not particularly keen on Jones, as most people know, but I didn't find him too obnoxious in this episode. I mean, he wasn't... All right, he did have moments of complete stupidity, but they weren't domineering and they didn't go on too long, and I didn't feel like padding. So I was quite willing to accept him in this episode. Hodges' contribution here, apart from getting wet quite
that
a bit.
He was the warden.
He was, yes, and still is. And there was a connection again. Wilson mentions on two occasions that Hodges happens to be a very good bowler. And in the series, there's a few series ahead, I think, there's an episode called The Test, which is where the Warden's challenge the Home Guard to a cricket match, and Warden Hodges does bowl in that. So that's either a coincidence or it is a link between those two.
A bit
two
of continuity
episodes.
Going through.
It might have been a little bit fortuitous, or maybe I'm reading too much into it, but because I think him bowling in this episode was purely as a plot device to blowing the mine up at the end. But you know, speaking as a woman, what did you think of Bill Pertwee in his underwear?
I was very glad they tried to cover him up very quickly.
So not attractive in any way, shape or form.
No.
I thought Pertwee's acting when he was drunk again was
very
good.
That was good.
Do you know, they're all good. Whenever any of the actors have to do a drunk scene, Wilson's done a couple, Arthur Lowe's done at least one I can think of, probably more than that. They're brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and maybe it's just easy to play a drunk. I don't know. I think I could probably just let myself go and have quite a fun time with that. So moving on, really, to the the finale, which is the external scene again, yeah. Which I think I remember in a couple of podcasts ago, I was comparing the same set within a particular scene, one when it was built in a studio and then comparing it to when it was used on location.
Right.
And you had a set-built pier here, and at the end you had an external pier, and they were clearly supposed to be the same pier, but
yes.
One was studio-bound, one wasn't. And this time round, I thought the two looked very similar. If you looked, I think I was comparing it to the Six Bells, and the Six Bells pub in another episode is a real pub, and the set that they show doesn't bear any real resemblance to the real location, whereas this one, I felt they did a pretty good job. And the only real question, really, for me was it was a pretty authentic prop. And I know they must have cut some scenes of the mine. So, I mean, when I say the prop, I mean the prop they used for the mine.
Right.
Because there were some scenes where they were just filming film takes or film sequences of the mine itself. But there was a shot in there where they had all the platoon and the mine in the water at the same time. So I wonder whether or not it was a real dud mine or something. But all quite interesting there, I think. So
who knows? I mean, the thing that got me was it actually just looked very cold out there. And I did think, the warden, is that Hodges again? I just thought he must have been freezing filming that.
He's always in the water.
Oh, is he?
In any episode, if someone's got to go in the water, then it's always going to be either Hodges or occasionally it's Pike. Hodges, yeah, I thought he looked absolutely freezing when yes. He was coming up out the outside of the pier. So, but no, there were all in all, I thought there was a couple of really good lines in this as well, and a couple. I like Fraser's spelling. How do you spell help in Morse code? H-E-L-P. See, that's obvious, perhaps, but it yes. makes me smile. I thought Arthur Lowe gave a particularly strong performance in this. His dialogue was very quick. It was quite typical of the early episodes, and this was only a series 3, whereas later on in the series he plays with the range of his line delivery. Sometimes he rattles it off really quickly, other times it's yeah. much more considered, and I'm not sure whether that's acting or whether he forgot his lines in some scenes, but I thought it was good to watch. The actual story itself, I do think is predictable. I'd agree with you there. And I wouldn't have said this is one of the best episodes of Dad's Army. But before I give it my mark out of 5, what would you score it as?
Probably a 2 or 3.
2 or 3, I need yeah. to know. One or the
Let's
other.
Let's go for 3. Okay. It's average.
Well, in that case, you've given it more than me, because I'll only give this 2.5.
Okay.
So you're allowed half marks. But no, I'd say about 50%, not one of my favourites, but still good value. And all that is left is for me to say thank you very much, Angela, once again, for spending an hour of your life, which you won't get back, watching Dad's Army and recording your thoughts with
me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. If you think old
England. Well, that's it for another Dad's Army podcast. Hope you really enjoyed episode 30. Thank you once again to Angela for joining us and sharing her thoughts on Menace from the Deep with us. If you'd like to get in contact with us, then our email address is james@dadsarmypodcast.com. We'll be back probably in the new year now, although I'm afraid I can't be more precise as to when episode 31 will be online. I would imagine episode 31 will be another commentary, so feel free to send in your suggestions as to which episode you would like us to talk about, and they're considerably easier to edit and get them online, you see, so rather than just going for weeks on end without anything, I think it would be rather good just to get a commentary up as soon as I can, and we'll speak to you again very soon. Thanks for joining us.